Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 23. This week's guest is Justin Quinnell. Andrew and myself sit down and talk to him about putting cameras in all kinds of crazy places and crazy eye camera obscuras.
Attention, Andrew Bartram. This is the pin napper, as you have so eloquently labeled me. You will be pleased to know, now the ransom is paid, your pinhole camera will be safely returned to you shortly. Well, most of it will be.
Did you make it back?
I did. Yes. Show 23.
Yes. Show 23. We
really made it to show 23. Hello, Justin.
Hello there.
This is Justin, you're not supposed to say anything yet.
People don't know you're on the show. Be quiet. Sorry. Anyway, Corey, have you had a good week?
I don't know
who that is. It's the guests are getting more troublesome, aren't they? Don't do as they're told.
Unwielding almost now. I've had a good week.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm pleased for you.
Hectic. We're getting ready to. Kids are going back to school, so I don't even think I haven't even shot anything this last week. I've been running around and just busy. So
I got my. Do you know what I picked up from the post office today?
Let me guess. Your zero image.
No, your reality's so subtle
from.
Yeah, that reality so subtle camera from Neil Piper finally sent it back to me.
That reminds me. Yeah. I got an anonymous call. We got an anonymous call from somebody that I'll put in at the beginning of the show. I don't know who it was.
We've had some emails as well, haven't we? You've been sending me copies of emails, but whether we'll get a chance to go through those today, maybe we'll have to do that another week.
So, Justin Quinnell, how are you?
Very well, very well. Hello there. Greetings from sunny Bristol, jewel of the West.
It's the hippest town in the UK, isn't it, Bristol?
It's okay. It's all right. It's sort of, it'll do. If people stop talking about Banksy, we can actually get a look in, you know.
Have you met Banksy? Does he?
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, he... apparently I have. Somebody told me I did a venue Christmas party many years ago, but I don't know who he was. I've got friends of mine who know him, but, he gets around. I don't know. I mean, sort of. I used to know when he was post office accountancy. I don't know. is that funny? Maybe not.
Post buff.
But do your pinhole images sell for the same value as?
My word! I can't begin to tell you. No, I think it's the word we're looking at. But you know.
So yeah. So to kick this off, I have a quote that I want to say that I think that Andrew. Agree with me that this is something that you've said, Justin. So I think this is what we should start the show off with. I think that with pinhole photography, I absolutely adore the fact that you don't know what's going to happen. Photography has become so predictable. 5 feet off the ground, 60th of a second, that is a correct picture. Whereas pinhole photography washes all that away, and it can start becoming elements of the element of time. What else does it say? Start doing images that aren't about a 60th of a second, and you start looking beyond vision, beyond what you can see yourself. So I think that's a great saying about
it.
Because
did you say that then, Justin, or is he?
I think I probably did in my many witterings. There was a fantastic bit of blurb by, is it Vim Vendors and his Polaroid stuff, and he was talking about how mobile phone photography is killing off what photography is, and I got to see that, and whether one agrees or not, it's just fascinating where photography is at the moment and also where it isn't. And you bring that to the pinhole thing, and there's so much life in it. There's so much sort of, let's say, you know, what is good about it.
Right.
You can't find things by saying, oh, well, you know, this doesn't happen, that doesn't happen. It's so third party. And,
right.
you know, if you're talking about life and you're not about sort of, let's say, you know, creating a piece of paper or creating some pixels or whatever, you're talking about what's happening inside your own head, then that whole pinhole journey and stuff is just wonderful. And I am finding, I got my pinhole photography, I just constantly playing. And people can't cope with that. People can't cope with the fact that somehow it's enjoyable. It's almost as if, I find myself sort of like getting into a lot of trouble by sort of like, you know, enjoying it. It's almost like you're not allowed to. You're supposed to find some element of miserableism somewhere, otherwise it's not art. And right. I'm finding that, like, it's very odd. I'm finding myself becoming a bit of a scientist, and it's really weird because I don't know what the difference is between art and science, apart from there's more funding in science. That's the only difference, you know. but I'm playing with it, and the wonder is there. You call it science, you call it art, you call it anything you want. There's wonder involved, and that's all you're after. And I suppose that's where, you know, that pinhole thing compared to the predictability. Predictability is, you know, it's like, you know, suddenly finding that, you know, the Damned release the same song the whole time. You know, it's just, it doesn't happen. It's not what you want. If I start, if I ever get bored with it, I'll stop. You know, I can't. You can't get bored with something when you don't know what's going to happen.
Every single time.
Yeah, and there's no nerds called Nikon or Canon who are saying, right, you can't do exposures of this duration of time unless you sort of pull your camera around of a car battery fixed up to it or something. You know, we're about lensless stuff, but I've been recently playing, and I may well do a workshop in it soon, where old cameras, I got this, it's 100 years old thing. It's an old roll film Kodak thing. And it's got a T setting. Old cameras used to have T settings. That meant you didn't have to have a cable release. T, you press the shutter, it opens. You press the shutter again, it closes. And that means you can keep the shutter open for long periods of time. And you put a piece of photo paper in the back of an old camera, and you can do exposure times for about 4 minutes in sunlight. And it gives, you then just scan the picture in. Now, I know it's digital and stuff, but it's so interesting to breathe new life into, you don't have to use chemistry and things, but breathe new life into cameras, which haven't been used for 100 years. And then combine that with, let's say, scanning it in, doing image inverse, just bypassing sort of, let's say, the sort of complete digital and mixing old and new tech. And seeing what effects you get. Different photo papers give you different colorations and different, I mean, if you want to have different tones of paper, but you don't have to have chemicals. And I've been playing a bit with that recently because you can get, you know, these beautiful cameras that used to cost, you know, a couple of weeks' wages. You can get them for virtually nothing. And it's very
So you're describing doing something kind of like you would do with the silography in the cans, where you just use a piece of paper and then you just put it straight and just scan it straight in, right?
Yeah, just a bypassing of the sort of whole tech stuff.
Yeah.
And also making it accessible, because I do loads of education. And I think, you know, where I'm playing right now I'm jumping from everything. I've just done these workshops down in South Devon, down in Devon for the East Devon Way. They've got this funding. I've been doing this photography down there for this Felma Holbert Gallery, who are fantastic. So I've been doing a load of art stuff, I suppose. I've been doing my performance, if you call it that, at different festivals throughout the summer, which is just a blast, and it's really funny. The camera obscura stuff, which again, you know, it's not pinholes, a blooming lens in a way, and I hate lenses, but when it comes to camera obscuras, they're amazing fun. And that whole, you know, it's like creating a television, which, you know, a sort of camera obscura TV in a box. So people look at TV and they see the image in front. And then you get people to play football with giant eyes on their head. So they see the image upside down and back to front. But it's sort of like trying to refine pointlessness and stupidity. But just there's almost like the sound barrier. There's a point at which you can think to yourself, oh, that's a bit silly. Or you can think, right, how can we carry on adding to this and eventually break through to the other side? So you're sort of like putting so much, not effort, but so much design or surrealism or whatever you call it into the performance that it ends up just being off its head, but fun. And that sort of like bringing everybody into play. That's an interesting concept. Just getting everyone to play along. And it's not only the people doing it, but the people seeing it. And it's all down to sort of, let's say, that the real image. It's like I sometimes say that, like, you know, a camera obscura is the, you know, the best thing about, you know, the only the best thing about virtual reality is the fact that, like, you've got actual reality behind it. And camera obscuras are actual reality. You know, it's actually what happens. It's the most live image you can get. And people are still amazed at seeing a camera obscura image. We're not amazed at watching sort of the latest sort of a Mission Impossible film. It's quite good. Even though they did edit out the bit when he broke his leg, rather a shame, but still. but, you know, they sort of, it's good. It's good fun. You know, and the 3D thing wasn't too bad. But you bung a big eye on somebody's head and they see the world upside down and back to front and they're completely flummoxed. There's something...
I've seen these, your images of these kids playing football with these eyes on their head. So what are they actually seeing? So they've got these things on their heads and they're... Yeah. And there's a hole, a pinhole or a lens?
What it is, they're called eye skewers, and everybody rips them off. It's a real pain. Otherwise, I could have been retired, but what the hell. Basically, it's a simple lens projected onto a simple screen in a big bin covered in gaffer tape. Yeah, that's not one to put it blatantly. That's basically what it is. But the main way of exploring light is to create dark, and the best way of creating dark is putting something over your head. And you see the world upside down and back to front.
And so they've got to get used to, they try to run one way, but they end up running another way.
Yeah. And you get one person opposite the other and you say, right, try and walk past each other without crashing. And it's so stupid. It's absolutely daft. And then you get the unicycle out and people get, no, actually I don't. But it is really weird. It's like those bicycles where you turn left and it turns right. Yeah. And it's something as well that, I think people take, there's something quite primordial about it. I think babies when they're born and stuff don't have an idea of what is left, right, up and down. And it takes a while for the brain to decide this is the right way up. So when we put these things on, we can actually, if you keep these things on for 20 hours, you end up seeing the world properly. And then if you take it off, you see the world upside down and back to front.
Because your brain, am I right in thinking that, yes, I am right in thinking that your lens in your eye, I mean, you're actually seeing the world upside down normally, aren't you? And your brain is doing that correction.
Yeah. You know, because... So this is what you'd see the world, how you'd see the world if you didn't have a brain.
Nice.
And it's the performance sides of it is a laugh. I mean, I get into festivals for nothing with my family and we have a laugh and we go from bar to bar with these eyes and a stupid football thing. I came up with this fly's eye, this compound eye I did for WOMAD this year, where there's multiple lenses and it's really weird and it's really strange and great fun, but also it's too heavy. So I couldn't really use it because, like, kids putting it on, they can hardly get it off them again. But the amount, it's rather like people designing weird bicycles, designing weird ways so camera obscure images can happen. It's like playing around with slots, you know, pinholes are brilliant, but slots can also see strange images or crosses. You know, the way you can perceive the world is like out there to sort of like, you know, to explore. I mean, one thing I'd love to play with sometime is having a camera obscura image next to a digital projection, both being the same contrast, same wide angle, and just have it so how it would look. Just seeing how a real projection looks of exactly the same image projected digitally, you know, something going through half a ton of God knows what cables and the internet and God knows what, you know, appear. Okay, there'd be a bit of a delay, but just seeing what reality is like compared to virtual, having them side by side, it's probably been done, but, you know, that'd be great fun. But I'm not saying this is just the camera obscura stuff. So my head's absolutely full of it after going away to festivals this summer.
You've just been, you just come back from, is it the WOMAD or Green Man.
We've got a festival on the Downs in Bristol with Noel Gallagher and Paul Weller and stuff like that. And they've dragged me up to there. Again, it's just an opportunity to sort of,
Are you going to get to put an eyeball on Noel Gallagher's head?
No, but I have had, who was it, The Wedding Present, the bassist from The Wedding Present went and put one on her head the other day. That's pretty good. And I've had a few other famous people. I photograph famous people wearing my eyes. It's quite good. You can say that to anybody, but I have got quite a few. Charlotte Church put on the other day.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You could have anybody under there. You just say it's someone famous.
You have to stay with this, you know. I think Banksy should wear one. Anyway, but that's the obscure stuff. The pinhole stuff as well. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm whittering a bit. But
that's great. You carry on.
The other game I'm playing right now is there was this dark room in Bristol, and it's a way of saving dark rooms. And this is very connected with Wonder, is that three of us got together. We call ourselves the Real Photography Company. And there's a dark room in Bristol, 14, 15, 16, 17 enlargers. It's a purpose-built thing. It was going to be closed, and we've just about saved it.
St. Paul's Learning Centre? Is that the place? Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be the watershed, but they moved it there, sort of thing. And we're basically doing workshops so people can sort of experience, seeing images appear in a dark room. But it's so much more than that. You get kids into, I'm not saying kids of all ages, into a dark room. I mean, my wife went and did a thing which was using a 35mm camera, developing the film and printing the prints. Yeah, so something you'd think, well, that's old tech. My word, it was a blast. They loved it because you're in the dark trying to load up films. It's also physical. It's also, experience,
Right.
And I found that website a little while ago, Justin, and as I was sort of Googling around, and you've got, you're a busy chap, aren't you? There's summer solstice solograph camera making and equinox solograph camera making.
Well, we've got those are the public ones. We keep on applying for grants and getting them, which is great. But you suddenly think, hang on, we're just about to do a whole load of workshops for refugees and stuff just to get them to, get them doing bits and pieces. So we got that coming up. We just had a load of over 50s we've been doing stuff for. I've got my school workshops. So I've got five workshops for primary school kids where they come in and in 3 hours, half of them build a little camera obscura. I've got a great design made out of a cereal packet. It's absolutely fantastic. Costs about 13p. And then, so they all have a camera obscura or actual reality headset, I call it. And then after an hour, they go to the dark room and they do a pinhole picture and watch it develop with a beer can camera. And then they go home with a 6-month exposure camera. And then after 6 months, we all get together. I scan all the pictures in that have come back. And we have a sort of celebration event at some science place in Bristol.
That's awesome. It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, that's great.
It's an absolute blast. And it's like trying, I'll never forget seeing images appear. And, just that whole magic involved with it all. And dragging people away from the screen-based world. And also because you can't have your phone on in the dark room, because it cast a blue light everywhere, and it just that just being suddenly thinking, hang on, this is our dark room now, and we're doing that. We've got our photo socials, which we've got some money for doing, where we actually do outreach stuff, and we're going to be going all around Bristol where people are and doing sort of half hour talks here and there. And it could be how to use your phone properly, or it could just be how to use old cameras, how to play with obscuras, how to just getting people together and just sort of around image making and photography and stuff.
When you're introducing obscuras to people and just that concept and reminding them how the world looks upside down in a darkened room, do you always link that back to recording the image, in some kind of pinhole camera, or sometimes do you just do the obscura bit and the image making doesn't necessarily follow?
It's all to do with the experience rather than photographing. I've always remembered photographing this building being blown up years ago in Bristol. I remember having this camera and sort of like doing several pictures. I never actually saw the building blow up. It was all done through a screen. And ever since then, I remember thinking to myself, no, look, we got to try and experience the world around us. And that's where holding a camera up, I think I'm probably just hate viewfinders. I think that's my problem. For years I thought it's lenses, but I think it's viewfinders. It's sort of something that says there's something between us and reality, something that interrupts it. That's an interesting weird one. I love with pinhole. It's like the potential for pinhole video. There's a few people done it with the sort of pin zip sort of recessed pinhole in 3-4 digital cameras and stuff. and they've done them really badly. People doing pinhole video do it terribly because they're so used to using viewfinders. And, you know, I need to get one. They're quite cheap. If you get a rubbish one, it doesn't work very well. You know, and I can sort of like, I reckon I could do some pretty mad pinhole videos. But, you know, it's just, again, it's not knowing what you're going to get. I think that's the important bit, is sure. the sort of like discovery. And, well, and the same with camera obscure, seeing people, you know, they sort of, no, I don't want to know. Because people just think it's putting an eye on your head and nothing happens. But you put the eye on your head and you're suddenly in this different world where everything's back to front and upside down and you're enclosed and it's, you're on another planet. It's great fun. Yeah. There was a part at WOMAD where they had these wind chimes going, this sort of rotating in the wind. Go, woof, 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 woof. And it's like something from Star Trek or something. It was, you know, you put one of these things on, everything's upside down and back to front. There's mad noises happening. You know, all done with a sort of rubbish bin covered in gaffer tape, which will suit me, really.
I think you're when you were just talking about the camera and the viewfinder, that sort of barrier between you and the world, and you end up missing things because you're concentrating on looking through the viewfinder. I think that's why I like, with traditional cameras, twin lens reflexes so much, because I can just stare ahead, you know, and particularly if I'm making portraits, you can just keep the engagement with someone you're talking to. And of course, with the pinhole, it's, I know it's not the same, but you know, you can still engage in the world while capturing that, can't you? That's,
talk to people.
It doesn't interrupt. It doesn't interrupt. You're still seeing.
Yeah.
You're still experiencing. And I think the thing with the phone, I mean, I know with, like, you know, everybody, go to every gig and everyone's got phones up left, right and centre, and everything's all being, the whole world being recorded the whole time. If you've got a video camera on your head and you just press record for sort of 70 or 80 years, you know. it depends what you want. I mean, that's fine if somebody wants to sort of do that sort of thing, but... you know, reality is important. And I think that however much sort of, you know, however clever tech is, I really love the sort of mixing old and new. I think that you can't ever ignore where things have been. And that, I mean, I feel quite responsible for being the only community darkroom in Bristol that, you know, everybody needs to get there. You know, ideally it's sort of, you know, I think every kid in the world should do a solograph camera. Everyone should, just to sort of like give themselves 6 months of time to think, what the hell have I done putting this beer can up in my garden? Or, you know, and then to understand afterwards the sort of like realization of the fact that, hang on, that line is the sun moving across. And then it goes, you know, almost reinforcing the fact that we're pretty small in this universe, yeah. You know.
Well, that's kind of, I think, that element of surrealism is what's seems like that's what Pinhole is starting to come around to, with all the anamorphic stuff. And and then some people are making, you know, cameras that are on 11 by 14 that have 9 different lenses, and they're just taking a different image on each lens at a different time of the day, so that when you develop it, you have, like, you know, 9 images, your whole trip or whatever, if you want to carry this big giant, you know, 11 by 14 pinhole camera around, you know. But that surreal side of the length of time it takes to do this holography, and then the surrealness of trying to understand what happens with it. I don't know. Maybe some people just don't want to, you know, don't like it. You know, I don't know. Some people really like it and some people apparently don't, you know?
Right. I mean, I think that whole experience that Tim McMillan went and did mad cameras, hardly any of his stuff's online. He did the Time Slice originally, and then the Matrix ripped him off. Tim McMillan started off making bizarre cameras with 10-8 film that you wound and walked around in a circle, and ended up doing big spirals and of images through slots. And oh my word, the guy was just so, you know, beyond vision. You can't get any further, you know. Amazing stuff. And that's remarkable. Albalardo Morel with his camera obscura sort of tent thing. Yeah, you know, the images where he's photographing the ground with the image in front of him projected on the ground. That is just beyond vision again. It's sort of,
yeah,
it's beyond what people have ever seen. And building cameras like that, all you need is an old overhead projector those things that are, you find in skips because everyone's got digital. The old OHPs that schools have, that block of the mirror and the lens, just get one of them and then make a little sort of like out of an old plastic greenhouse thing, just make a little tent and you've instantly got an Abelardo Morel sort of photographing whatever's in front of you on the ground camera. And having them at schools, it's just bewildering where you can photograph somebody, you know, or somebody in front of you with the ground that you're standing on as the background. You know, it's just one of these new ways of seeing. It's superb,
right?
And they're easy ways of doing it. In fact, I need to make one. I've got a couple of OHPs in the shed.
You're just
camera obscuras I've made.
You're just opening up even more things for me now.
Yeah,
so, I don't think I've got an OHP anyway.
I find it very confusing to suddenly go into lenses because, you know, I'm a pinhole photographer. You know, I sort of balk at lenses, but the camera obscura thing, I think I can get away with that.
Yeah.
I mean, the pinhole stuff, though, I mean, this dark room, I went to them the other day and I was also chatting with the Banksy stuff. I did an exhibition downtown in Bristol where I just basically did loads of orphalograms, which are these flash photos taken a few centimetres from your face with a beer can camera. They're brilliant. Orphalograms. Sorry, but they're brilliant.
I want to talk to you about those. Yeah, I saw them.
They're great.
They are just awful. I love those.
Idiot. And you know, they're really good, but you can, you know, in Bristol you can get big A0 size prints done for about £4 and then just paste them on a wall. And the learning center where the dark room is has got this graffiti all over this wall. I said to the person in charge, I went and said to her, look, you know, can we use this? And she said, yeah. So we're going to paint over it and put up the exhibitions in A0 print.
Nice.
And they'll get graffitied, and when they do, just put another one up. Yeah. And it's this really nice way, because the thing about photography as well is you want them to be, you know, with photography, you want it to be some hard copy somewhere rather than just a digital file. And you don't really want to put an exhibition somewhere where nobody is. I love exhibitions where people are actually, you know, that are put up where they are. A lot of like Mark Sink stuff in Denver, you know, the sort of worldwide-y stuff that he does with his month of photography and things. I think that's happening next year. Hey, I wonder if he wants to invite me over. Nah, of course he won't. Oh well.
you should join in with the World Pinhole Day get together. You know that was in Norwich this year, and there was.
Oh, I do a thing here, Pinhole Day. I know you are.
Yeah, but they're all in Boston in America next year, not Lincolnshire, and they're meeting up there.
Are they?
Yeah. So this year was Norwich.
So, oh, wow. That's about the same distance of Bristol from Boston.
Yeah, right. Let's talk about those awfulograms. You're using a flash with those?
Yeah, two flashes. Two handheld flashes, quite powerful, and they're linked with a slave unit. So when one goes off, the other does.
Right.
You need to be an octopus to do these photos. You need to get the person who's doing the picture to hold the camera really close to them, yeah? And then you have two flashes. These are big, powerful, not big, but they are, you know, when you've got four batteries in a flash gun, they're usually powerful enough.
Yeah.
And they suck out the juice quite quick with the flashes. But you set one off at the same time as the other, holding the flash about 4 or 5 centimeters away, and the person goes, whoa, that's hot, and then you just develop it. But it's about as a limit of, you know, because normally with beer can pictures, you're in sunlight for 5 or 6 seconds, but you get about the same amount of light if you hold the flashes really close.
So are these like those Metz handheld stick flashes, those sort of powerful things?
The sort of power, but you can get old sort of Sunpak sort of, flash guns and those stuff.
Thyristor flash guns. Yeah.
Yeah, really fun thing. You can get them pretty cheap and little handheld ones. I've got a whole load. I keep on sort of like breaking them, but you can usually get new ones and stuff. And they just sort of it's pushing it to an nth degree. And you can also do 360. I've got a great 360 degree. You know, it means you don't have to worry about camera shake and stuff because it's a 5/1000th of a second. And there's something very what I love. Okay, people end up looking like hamsters, and it's all really strange and extreme. But it's real. There's nothing distorted about it.
Right.
Because it's how light is when it comes to traveling in a straight line. It may well be recorded on a curved film plane, but like, it's only because our brain, you know, our retinas are curved. And like, you know, if I built a sort of like a pinhole camera on the inside of a ball, you know, it would create quite a distorted image unless your brain reinterpreted it. So, you know, it is real. That's how we appear. And the other thing which got, you know, I'm really slow and it takes me a while to understand what the hell's happening or at least have a stab at it. And one thing was like chatting to somebody who was losing their sight and stuff. And like, it just got me thinking how, this is some years ago, how do people see your people? If some blind person is trying to, you know, touching somebody's face to see what they look like, do they interpret people in the way that those orthograms look, you know, noses and teeth? And it's just, it's quite bewildering. It's opening, it opens up weird areas. So, and they're funny. These photos are funny. And why they're funny is really cool.
Yeah.
You know, why? I'm sorry, I can't be classed as a fine artist because these sort of things are fun. And instantly there's a bit of fun involved with them. It just suddenly sort of like, to me, it feels as if it feels worthwhile. To other people, it sort of seems to snuff it out as any sort of any significance at all.
Right.
But to me, that's where I get through this pointlessness barrier, this sort of like sound barrier, which like people sort of have been striving to get through. And if you get through the pointlessness barrier and end up doing orthograms of people or doing one of your hamster or getting people to put eyes on their heads and having a game of football and stuff, watching it on live TV in inverted commas, then I don't know. Makes me think I've done something useful anyway.
On God your on your orthologram page, there's I've just been, as you're talking, I was just flipping through them, and there's one of a guy called Martin, and he's got glasses on and a hat, I think, and he really does look like a hamster.
Yeah, I saw that one too.
Yeah, he looks good. And there's been others. I've done loads because I always do them when I'm traveling around. Unfortunately, what normally happens is the kids go off with the photos and I never get a chance to do to copy them. But there have been some wonders, some that have just been so extreme. I've been getting people now to sort of put their fingers to hold their lips down so their nails are near their teeth. And
you do the eyes as well, don't you? Pulling the eyelids down.
It's one of those jammy dodgers. I did somebody eating one of them. Curly whirlies. Hey, do you get curly whirlies in America?
I don't know what a curly whirly is.
you don't even get wheat crunches. Don't tell me. Anyway, curly whirlies are these funny chocolates that sort of like look like a piece of DNA, but they're a bit bigger. I actually built an Eiffel Tower out of them for my kids the other day, a few years ago. They're very difficult building materials. They're covered in chocolate and they melt.
Terry Scott, who's an English actor who's died now, he used to advertise them dressed as a schoolboy. Do you remember?
I don't know that either.
Yes. Yeah, I remember that. I'm old.
I know.
Anyway, but people basically eating stuff and things. Just, and, you know, I do faces because that's what's around. There's so much potential with playing with these things. There's so much. It doesn't have to be faces and toes and, you know, all the rest. There's loads you can do.
These are beer can images with your powerful flash. So are they with just a simple pin, and are you using paper or film in these cameras?
Paper. And that's what's so odd is even with paper at 2 ASA, there's enough light from two synchronized flash guns to create an image as long as it's close to the subject.
Yeah.
And when you say close to the subject, you mean 5 inches, 4 inches,
three inches.
Yeah, gotcha.
Really close.
Can you recommend a particular beer can or something that you like drinking?
God, it's got to be light, Bud Light. No, but not. Ugh. No, come on, copy some of these.
And what's and you're using Speckle you're head. Using laser drill?
Now you're talking. No, the best beer can is one that somebody needs me to empty for them. that's the best one. I did a talk years back where I normally show people how to make a beer can camera. I decided to use one that hadn't been opened. And I thought, I just got a can opener and just put it down and the spray of beer everywhere. I just carried on as if nothing was happening and just sort of like poured it into a glass, drank most of it and carried on making the beer can camera. I thought it was hilarious, but nobody else did. I also spent 4 minutes once. No, it wasn't. It felt like it. When I was showing people to make the shutter, and just, you know, when you're trying to find the edge of a bit of insulation tape, mm-hmm. and you're going round and round trying to find the end of a bit of insulation tape, it'd just be interesting performance art, seeing how long you can pretend to be searching for the end of insulation tape until the whole lecture theatre empties. You know, see who survives the longest.
And the just, very last person you can be like, oh, here it is. Okay, so here's what we're going to do.
Yeah, that's it. Just, oh, you've all gone. You know,
I've got to come to one of your workshops, but I don't often go to Bristol. But you,
I go to Cambridge. I've been doing stuff at this school. There's some school.
Well, there's a few.
They keep having me.
Yeah. Well, actually, in Cambridge City Centre.
Near there.
Yeah.
It's Percy School.
Oh, I don't know him.
No, Percy. P-E-R-S-E.
I don't either. Have we had him on the show?
No, we'll have to get him on.
They kept having me, and it's so far away. Real pain. But, like, it's also, I went, and so last time I was there, it started snowing, and I went and said, oh, my God, it'd be great, wouldn't it, because doing a bit of sledging. And the guy went and said, yeah, it's about 15 miles to the nearest hill. And I thought, oh, yeah. That's Cambridge.
It is. Like, I'll have to keep an eye out for you, because every year in Cambridge they have Science Week as well, I think, and you'd fit right in there because they have all sorts of weird...
The thing about Science Week is they happen everywhere, yeah. And I do the stuff at the dark room. It's like Pinhole Day.
Yeah.
I do Pinhole Day at the dark room and stuff. But you know, and it's strange. Do you know that I'm finding sciencey, the Institute of Physics, the British Science Association, even CERN in Switzerland, like they're interested in dragging me down. That'd be a laugh, wouldn't it? Or is it the Large Hadron Collider? Or we were chatting at the WOMAD science thing. They have a bit of science there. And we reckoned that my pinhole, the camera obscurers you put on your head, those eye skewers, they're the small head-on colliders. Yeah, we thought that was quite funny. It took me a few minutes to think of that one. And so, you know, sciencey stuff. Scientists seem to appreciate fun a bit more than sort of, let's say, the other way around. I don't know. See, I don't know what I'm on about now, really, but I love the sort of factor. I think the thing about science and art is that, like, if the pinhole photography is so beautifully, you know, it's beautifully on the edge of this sort of, like, precipice on both sides. So scientists hate it because it's too arty, artists hate it because it's too sciencey, and pinhole photographers just sort of, like, don't care. you know, it's that we know where we're going with it all. We know that, like, it's beyond this sort of conventional idea of what things should be, but I'm absolutely loving sort of being a sort of sciencey person.
Yeah, but you're in a long tradition, aren't traditional? Yeah, and I've not even had a speckled hen yet. It's too early. But I was reading a pinhole textbook that someone recommended to me, and it just goes back in. I mean, it's the beginning of it. It just talks about the early studies of light by, you know, early scientists, like probably Newton and Galileo and people studying the way light came through a small hole. And then they started building them into cathedrals to, you know, project a pinpoint of light at a certain time. And that's how they started to realize that light can get bent slightly and diffracted. And, you know, it's
Isaac Newton with his human hair. He had a human hair in front of a hole, and he worked out the measurements of the size of the shadow. And from that, he sussed out that, like, light was bending a bit.
Yes.
But then he also, the guy who also invented gravity, a guy called Hooke, like, he was his main competitor. And one thing Hooke did, which was
didn't invent gravity, did he?
Well, I'm calling it that. And one thing Hooke did was he went and sort of basically died before Newton. So Newton bought up every picture of Hooke he could find and destroyed them all. So nobody'd remember Hooke and everyone remember Isaac Newton.
Huh.
He also decided, because there's only six colours in the rainbow, he decided to include indigo as a seventh, because he's an alchemist and everything should be in sevens.
Yeah.
Talking about rainbows, they might be giants are playing in Bristol.
I was just bluffing my way through it, but you clearly do.
I love the history of photography. One thing that I keep on trying to do is that photography started in Bristol. Humphrey Davy and Thomas Wedgwood, 1803, they sussed out a way of doing photograms by meeting up in Bristol. But the problem is they couldn't fix them. So all Fox Talbot and Yates and all these other, and Daguerre and all these other people, they all got the credit. Whereas Bristol is the birthplace of photography. And the Fox Talbot Museum is only about sort of 20 miles away, 30 miles away. And the last thing they want is to be upstage. So if you ever hear about me suddenly being found upside down, drowning in a deep tank, you know it's them trying to sort of shut me up. But like, it's basically like photography started in Bristol. Humphrey Davy, Thomas Wedgwood, kaboom.
What, Humphrey Davy of the guy with the lamp down the mine?
That's... with the lamp, yeah. Rather than the lady with the lamp, who's more Crimean War, Humphrey Davy was a bloke born in Penzance. He was like Newton. He was born in the middle of nowhere. I mean, Newton had the sort of plague to avoid and stuff. But Humphrey Davy was a lot later. He was born in Penzance and... He was a genius. He discovered gases and knew that gases had different weights and thicknesses, and from that designed a lamp that stopped thousands of people dying down mines. He was brilliant. At the age of 23, he was in charge of the Royal Society. At 23 years old, you know, I just about learned what a book was, let alone reading one. You know, and this guy was unbelievable. He was fantastic, and also everyone liked him. Whereas Isaac Newton hated everybody, and everybody hated him. In a way, I'd prefer Isaac Newton. He sounded far more of a challenge. Sounds far more. But Humphrey Davy, Thomas Wedgwood in Bristol. So history of photography is something else I absolutely love, and being able to, you know, even hold up a mobile phone on inverse, setting the image on inverse and holding it up to a paper negative. And, you know, you've basically can start talking about 160, 170 years worth of history of photography in a few inches, you know, and that being able to put some sort of like, you know, put some, you know, just basically have some idea about the history of stuff. And Moti, 400 BC, sussing out light travelling the same way as arrows being fired. And it goes into loads. Al-Hazan in Arabia, sussing out the images upside down. But there's so little history of science taught at schools. My girl, Rosie, is just my daughter's just about to go to secondary school. And in science, they'll tick the box that says history of science by just getting to do one thing and then that's it. Whereas the whole context of history of with photography and all the rest, you know, if people didn't look into how things worked in the past, we wouldn't have camera obscuras, pinhole, right. We wouldn't have all the rest of the exploring stuff that people are playing at, you know, the old tech stuff.
One of my professors from when I was in college is going to come on with us and talk about that whole timeline of pinhole and camera obscura, you know, all the way back to the beginning of light, I guess. I don't know how far back it's going to go.
The Big Bang.
The Big Bang, yeah.
That's and, not bad. I Andrew's, go back to 500
Andrew's
million
Big
years.
Bang. He's going all the way back to Andrew's Big Bang.
500 million years. Nautilus is using a pinhole to view the world. How's that?
There you go. So how did you... I absolutely love the pictures with you having the camera in your mouth. How did you go about making? I mean, were you taking 35 millimeter and cutting it down and putting it in about half of the size of a matchbook box or something?
It's a 10-8 Gondolfi plate camera. I've got. No, it's a
on a tripod.
It's thematic cameras. They were these long fin cameras that Kodak brought out in the 60s and 70s because people couldn't load 35mm. And they still make 110 film now. Lomo make it. And it's incredible. You got 24 little bits of color film all wrapped up in a little plastic cartridge. And so it's fitting one of those in my mouth, which you can just about do again if you've got a massive mouth. It's getting trickier to develop the stuff. There's one place in Bristol that does, but I haven't done any.
So pictures. you're talking about those. My mom had a camera that took those. So it's two round containers on each end, and it's an inch or two long in the middle, and it's only about the width of a pencil. 1.27 cartridges. Is that what they are?
No, 1.10.
Yeah, 1.26. No, 1.26 was the bigger ones, but 1.10 is the smaller ones.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
1.10 is 1.10 is a. Alive and kicking because, as you say, Lomography make them, and I developed a role. Pentax do some nice zoom cameras, SLRs, and things, don't they?
I love those pictures of your mouth. Those are awesome.
I love them, and they're so weird how it evolved, because I originally made the camera because it's indestructible. And it's one of these things where I was staring out of the window. I'll never forget it. I was staring out the window, and I just put it in my mouth. And I started thinking,
I'm still confused, though, because you've got this... You're making a camera from the 110 cartridge, or you're not sticking a whole 110 camera in your mouth, are you? Because that would just be...
I can fit that in. No, just the 110 cartridge. It's instructions on my line, smiley cams, I call them, instructions online. And the pinhole's about a fifth of a millimetre, about that. Can't really make them much smaller. And... yeah, then what I often do with them is I've got two flash guns, again, synchronized. So I've got the angle so you can illuminate the subject and the inside of your mouth at the same time without flashing.
You've got remarkably clean teeth, I notice, on the inside of your mouth.
They get cleaner. I haven't smoked now for 19 years. So when I started doing them, it was pretty sort of like, you didn't know whether it's a picture of my teeth or a negative of my teeth, being honest. but like after I gave up, then they soon cleaned up, which is rather good. Sometimes you can still see bits and pieces of sort of like spinach and stuff stuck in there, but it's quite weird. I do love them. It was just that suddenly realizing it's having a degree in photography where you know your inverse square law and your sort of synchronized flash and depth of field and everything just coming together. It took a while to sort of master it, and then also Dowie Lewis, who's a UK publisher, I mean, he hasn't done the orthograms, I think he's had enough of me, but that whole, you know, him saying, look, we got to do a book of these, was really fun. And it's I don't know. I don't want to make things sound as if everything's just fun and all the rest of the stuff, but it doesn't.
Why not?
No, yeah, why not?
You know, there's enough misery to go on, but it's also like, you know, just I've got some, the one of Lincoln Memorial, I love the one of the Lincoln Memorial. It's just odd. And I've got a few because it was done, I started doing them in the early 90s, and I got a few and I was lying down underneath the old Twin Towers and stuff, you know, looking straight up from inside my mouth. And the thing with photography is what history does to places and time. And, you know, it affects, you know, in the same way as like the 6 month exposure camera photos, you know, you look at them and you can see the point on the picture that people were born, the point on the picture that people died, they are of a period of time, and you can't do anything but affect you. So I am slow with realizing stuff. I really am. But after a while, things dig in and you suddenly think, hang on, you know, we got something here. This is okay. And also when somebody says something like that's stupid or that's rubbish, that, or these pictures are pathetic, you know, you're getting somewhere. And I think it's really important. I really think that, like, you know, I don't know where I'd place it, but yeah, some people can't cope with it.
Did you get the idea to photograph through a cream cracker?
Paolo Ghioli, not one of mine. Paolo Ghioli, brilliant, wonderful pinhole photographer. He did photos for cream cracker. It's a tribute to him, but he hasn't done flash photos for cream cracker. And there's something else I did with the cream cracker. Oh yes, I normally show it as a camera obscura. So I've got a little template of a dolphin, which I have on a flat on a torch, and I show them the dolphin upside down on the torch and then show it through the cream cracker onto a screen, and people see a whole pod of dolphins through the holes in the cream cracker, which I don't think Paolo Ghioli did. But there we go. Photographing, the other thing as well he doesn't do is whenever you photograph somebody through the holes in the cream cracker is you've got to say cheese. Sorry, I say the word saltine. Sorry, I should do the whole sentence again using the word saltine.
I was going to say, I don't know what a cream cracker is, guys. I'm sorry. But
it's a saltine.
Right, okay.
Replace that. Yeah, no.
Do you not have cream crackers in America, Corey?
We have saltines.
Oh, okay. Saltines. Right.
It's like they have aluminum, you know, none of the aluminium rubbish.
No.
We know.
And the other thing they don't have in America is tall beer cans. And it's a real drag. So you've got the shorter, stubby beer cans.
No, that's not true. We have tall beer cans.
Not enough.
Maybe not more than you guys do, no, but
yeah, you need the 440 ones. They're the ones that fit 5x7 paper. Pulled off now by Corey because he obviously knows his beer cans more in America more than me. I obviously haven't been there enough.
My problem is I drink beer either from a real ale pump or in a bottle if I'm forced to. But
a real ale pump.
Yeah. Ooh. So
that's a false ale pump.
Yeah.
That's a water tap.
So I don't have many beer cans lying around. So I'll have to.
I've got 150 6-month exposure cameras to give out to kids in the next month. And each of those 6-month cameras take 2 cans. So I've got my work cut out, really.
And whereabouts are you leaving them? Just in random places around Bristol? Or where are you asking the kids to leave them? In their gardens?
Basically giving out to the kids to put in their gardens. I was at Land's End with Falmouth. I lecture at Falmouth Uni. And I was at Land's End. It was a year and a half, 2 years ago, something like that. And I was just about to do a picture of somebody with my camera obscure eyes, my eye skewers, at the sign that says Land's End. It's in Cornwall, end of the country.
Yep.
And I got this phone call and said, "Hello, is that Justin Cornell?" I said, "Yes." This is Scotland Yard. And that's basically the head of the police in the UK. And I thought, what? How the hell they know me? And basically they'd found one of my pinhole cameras where there'd been some sort of like, you know, some bomb or something.
Oh, and God.
Cameras at all. But
how did they know it was yours? Do you have a little, if found, please return to Justin Quinnell?
It wasn't one of mine, but it's one that basically somebody had put up. And, I get students to do it. People read it off my website and, you know, photo students put them up. And this one had been very close to the Houses of Parliament. And the police weren't impressed. And I said, look, okay, it's nothing to do with me. I didn't tell them when I put it there. But I'll tell people just to put them up in their gardens and stuff.
You should start letting everyone know if they put one up, they should put a little card in there that says, Andrew Bartram told me to do this.
Yes, I know. That's the sort of thing. Well, it's getting dodgy. It's getting trickier. I mean, nowadays, what I can do is I actually can Araldite bits of straw to them if they're out. I did one at Glastonbury tour, which didn't come out. And I Araldited loads of, which is glue, sort of loads of straw to sort of disguise these things.
Camouflage them.
Yeah, camouflage the things. I mean, it's very funny. There's some guys in Spain went and actually got them using helium balloons to obstruct the CCTV cameras. They actually stuck them on top of CCTV cameras. So when the camera's buzzing from left to right, over a couple of months, these cameras are recording the sort of where the CCTV, so it's a camera looking at the camera. That's really fun.
That's awesome.
It is great. And there's so many people. I mean,
how did you come up with the, well, not come up with it, but the solography in general? Because I know that around the time I saw your video doing it, that kind of kicked off the, you know, kind of kicked off the trend. I mean, where did you come up with
Carlos
that?
Carlos Lopez, Tarja Trich, or Tarja Trich is how you pronounce it in Finland. And I suppose myself, yeah, but really Carlos Lopez and Tarja Trich were the main two. I had no idea how to do it, but before any of us, a guy did it about 30 years ago. I'll try and remember his name. Amazing pinhole photographer, sundial maker, whose name I've forgotten. But anyway, he did one, which was quite complicated and in a weird sort of system, and it was on film. I don't think it's Dominique Stroubon. I'll have to remember who it was. But he went and did one. And for years, I was thinking, how on earth did he do that? And it suddenly hit me, because I was trying it with neutral density filters and film.
Yeah,
I was trying it for about a year or two. And the difficulty is the fact that, like, you have to put these things with a step ladder, otherwise they get lost. And you can't do a test exposure for a day, not in the UK. And, you know, so it's difficult. You've got to find places to put them. And it suddenly, you know, my test exposure was a 3-month one of the Clifton Suspension Bridge. And even they, the guy who's the bridge master, who I know at this bridge in Bristol, went and said to me, look, sorry, but you're going to have to take it down because people keep on saying there's a suspicious thing on the bridge and stuff. I painted that one white to make it look like the sort of wind vane and stuff. But it's getting, you know, it's, I suppose all three of us came up with the idea or how to do it properly the time. And more recently, I've been putting them on tall ships, which have been going across the Atlantic and stuff. I haven't actually put this on my website yet. Or it is there. It says light waves at the bottom of the front page, where it's basically these ships that don't have any motors and they take wine across the Atlantic or from Portugal to places and olive oil and things. And there's some people I know who have them, the Nautilus and stuff, and they put these pinhole cameras at the top of the masts and just go across the Atlantic doing exposures for the whole year and things.
Wow.
And nobody's going to tell you off for that, are they?
No, but it's tricky to, because I'm not going to go up these blooming things. It's scary enough just being at the bottom of them. I've got about four or five images, but often they're shaken a bit and stuff. But there's a few which have come out, and just trying to interpret them, you know, the different lines and stuff, doing journeys, long journeys with beer cans and things stuck onto things. It's really fun. I think maybe slow journeys. I think Diana Bolse was trying to photograph a glacier a few years ago. I don't know if she's getting on with that. She had a pinhole camera set up to do a long exposure of a glacier. I'm sure I heard that.
Probably and melted.
Slow movement stuff. But the ship thing's really funny because it's, you know, it's just extreme. And
well, with a normal solograph, you've got some, it's fixed, isn't it? So you've got the land and you've got obviously got the sun and the, I don't know whether you get the moon as well, but anyway, certainly the sun. But with a ship, there's no point of reference, is there? Because it must all just be
horizon.
Yeah.
There's horizon, but also you've got the mast in front. If you put it on the back mast, so you've got the ship.
Yeah.
And so the ship is always static compared to the back.
Yeah. So you'll get the ship.
I put a couple up before I did the ship stuff and things where they were pointing at each other, two cameras pointing at each other in the garden, just swinging around for a year. And that was quite odd. They came out in a strange way, but then it got me thinking of journeys and putting things on objects on stuff. And it was actually there's a company here who wanted me to put one on some cruise ship because they thought they could sell it and stuff.
You know, a good idea, Justin?
Mm-hmm.
I did a picture on a ferry. A ferry, you know, like with cars. Well,
like a little female.
A big ship. I did a picture on a big ship that carries a bunch of cars across a body of water.
Okay.
And instead of pointing it at the front of the boat, I pointed it at the back of the boat. And I got the wake. I got the wake from the ship recorded as lines, as wavelengths, you know, like the resonance of the, because the wake was moving with the ship the whole time. So you can just see the lines behind it. They're not blurry. They're defined, you know, looking behind it.
How long was it?
It was about three or four minutes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That, as you say, you're almost just looking at tonality of, you know, it's like All Flows, John Blakemore stuff in Ambergate, the sort of 5/4 long exposures, sort of waterfall-y things.
Now I know a bit about that because I've met John Blakemore and been on done some printing with him, and he was looking at different ways of capturing time, and so he pioneered the technique he used. There was lots of small exposures over time, so he didn't just hold his lens open, but he captured those famous images that you're talking about just by lots of small exposures, one on top of the other, so you're getting lots of sort of defined images but piled up on top of each other to give this long time.
And I mean, that's what, you know, if they digital don't allow you to do that, and the one he did up in Cape Wrath with the big rock sort of like in the midst, which is one of my favorite ones of his, that was, I think, what he got him into doing it, because it was so wet at the time. He had a chance to do one exposure and then he had to wipe all the water off and do another one. And he started doing, you know, building up the exposures one top of the other. But I mean, that whole energy and landscape stuff. And also Catherine Faulkner, who's based at Greenwich University. I mean, she does pictures where pinhole cameras are put onto the strings of musical instruments to give a vibration, and does pictures like that, or does exposure times for the duration that a piece of music is being played. I put one onto a bow of a violin years ago, but I usually get distracted into things like, it goes from being a classical piece with a violin, I suddenly think to myself, hang on, let's try a snooker cue in the pub. I put pinhole cameras on snooker cues and then some beer pools and stuff like that. So it rather goes back down to sort of the lowest common denominator, I'm concerned, rather shame. But that whole resonance stuff, she's even done these brilliant pictures of people reading in libraries, pinhole pictures, where the exposure is dictated by the time it takes for somebody to read a chapter of a book. So she just says, could you read a chapter of a book, and does the picture. And that's the picture. It's that duration of time, which instead of looking at it as an object visibly, it's looking at it as an object of time, or, you know, the amount of time it takes to whatever, like doing 6-month exposures or exposures from when somebody's born to when somebody's died, or, you know, just trying to look at a different way to image the world, not just visually, but sort of something else that you can sort of feel or experience, which is connected to the time that we're on the planet, really.
And adds texture or anything to your pictures.
Yeah, I mean, I just love that. Catherine Faulkner keeps on finding new ways of doing stuff. I need to. I wish I had sort of more time on my hands to do these things. It's one of those, you know. Anyway, yeah, it's one of those things. We're just continuing every day. I manage to sort of like do, you know, apply myself to sort of another sort of bizarre idea, even if it doesn't work. It's still
Justin,
sort of.
Justin, is this? Are you at a stage now where this is your day job, or? When did it become your day job, and what did you do before that?
Well, I was a travel photographer. After I did a degree in photography, and then was virtually employable. Went and worked in a wood for a year. That was fun. And then ended up doing photos of Turkey for Horizon Holidays. We're based in Birmingham. And then after a few years, realized that was a bit weird, got a good tan, but not much else. And then got asked to do teaching. So I taught, ended up head of photography at South Bristol College. And then, always doing bits and pieces. And then started at South Bristol College. I got into the pinhole.
Yep.
And that was 25 years ago. And then I've done a PGCE, so I've taught at schools. But now I work doing workshops, pinhole, and stuff around the UK and at Falmouth University. So that's been the last sort of mainstay for the last 7 years, 8 years.
What workshops away from Bristol or festivals are you attending for what's left of the summer?
I've got another one down in South in Beer. And then it gets to September where I've got Falmouth for a week. I've got the Manchester Science Festival if they eventually say yes, but like the people who are gonna I don't know, we'll see what's happening with that. I don't care too much. And then I'll have a lot of universities don't really do things like spend money anymore, but I will have sort of 3 or 4 universities. There'll be Gloucester, there'll be Bournemouth, there'll be who else will have to be Birmingham, quite a few like that. I'll probably, this place up in Cambridge will have me again, they seem to. And I'll think to myself, oh God, it takes months to get to Cambridge.
It's worth it though, when you're there.
Oh yeah, no, I absolutely,
must be something you can do with punts.
With what?
Punts, P-U-N-T-S, oh, you know, those boats with the big stick.
I shall give it a go. I think that's, I'll tell you what, next time in Cambridge, yeah, let's go punting.
Yeah. Okay. Message me.
Yes, I shall. I shall say, look, come on, we got a sort of messing about on a river stuff.
I saw somebody on, I think it was on Facebook, had put a time lapse image. They'd set their camera up on a bridge on a busy bank holiday, and they just captured in slow motion or time lapse all the punts going up for like an hour, and it just shows speeded up. They're all kind of colliding into each other and bumbling, and then like some guy falls in. It's just brilliant. And you must be able to do something with a pinhole camera, but I haven't worked that yet.
It'd be fun. That'd be good. I'll apply myself to that thought.
There you go.
The hassle is half the time when I get to these places, someone else I'm going to as well. The Association of Science Education Conference as well. That's always a laugh if you're into lots of people going on about the Association of Science Education. But there'll be other things here and there. I mean, the main thing is my dark room is like, I've got workshops, which we've got, you know, we've applied for funding, we've got the funding, so we're going to be doing the workshops. And I would love it to you know, it's mainly around Bristol and St. Paul's, which is quite a poor area and stuff. But I'd love it to be a sort of place where, you know, schools would send their kids and we can do, you know, inspire them into wonder and stuff with, you know, with the history, with the science, with the art, with the design technology, with the recycling, with the whole time aspect, with the ICT element, just all the variety of things that people can do and the environment of being in a dark room. And I mean, I was born without a sense of smell. I'm a nosmic, but everybody says, oh, the smell of a dark room. And you think, huh? But, you know, it's something that people never forget. And it seems like, you know, people have the difference between having an hour and a half of doing some pinhole pictures and watching images appear in a dark room and stuff like that. Compared to staring at a screen, there's no comparison.
Corey and I both have dark rooms. Well, I think Corey, you've just got himself an enlarger as well. So we just love hiding away in the dark rooms, and I'm doing a bit of salt printing as well, combining pinholes with salt prints. So that's
we know about your salt printing.
Well, Andrew. I just thought I'd get it in again. I like to mention it every week.
Oh, fantastic. That's superb. Salt print's great. Chemigrams, cyanotar, anything. There's a guy who did wet plate stuff in our dark room a few weeks ago. Oh, forgotten his name. I wasn't around, it was rather a shame. But like, they're fun, you know. A bit of mercury vapor never hurt anyone.
A little cyanide in the morning is always a wonderful start to day.
Two spoonfuls.
I love the smell of cyanide first thing in the morning, wasn't it? Napalm, wasn't it?
Napalm. Oh, yeah, Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Those are the days. Yeah. Cool.
Well Justin... it must be quite good. Sorry, mate. It must be quite good not having a sense of smell because that stop bath is very vinegary and that's a bit smelly.
It is very vinegary. Yeah.
But like, it reminds me actually, I've got a whole load of stop bath here. I've got to take it down to the dark room. But no, it's odd not having a sense of smell because, well, it's quite handy actually. Most smells seem to be awful. So there we go.
Cool. Justin, thanks for coming and talking to us.
Thank you. Look after yourselves. Keep inspiring, keep doing this sort of thing. And yeah, hopefully I shall hit Cambridge sometime soon.
Well, you've got put me in your phone because and message me.
Yes, I shall.
I'll take you to some haunts in Cambridge.
You won't fit in his phone, Andrew. Come on.
You can try and show me a statue of Isaac Newton because there's only one and you can't get to it. A bit rubbish. No, take me to a pub quiz. I'll be good at that.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. Yeah, and Justin. Folks out there, if they're not already familiar with you, where's the best place to view your workshops that are coming up or your own personal work? So just plug away.
Pinholephotography.org, that'll do. Real Photography Company in Bristol, but you can get there through pinholephotography.org. If anybody wants to have a go at a dark room, we've got them in Bristol, and I'll be doing workshops and stuff. And there's a few things coming up, teaching teachers, six-month stuff. And yeah, just general fun play. But yeah, I'll still be around for a while, as long as light travels a straight line anyway.
And do you have any presence on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or those fine places?
Yeah, I do Twitter, but it confuses me. I do, and I've not done Instagram, which is the main thing you're supposed to, but it shows you how old I am. I'm more into Semaphore, really.
I thought you were going to say Flickr.
Remember that? Is that still...
Yeah, the Lensless Podcast has a Flickr group. There's 62 people.
Platforms. I can't keep on top of that. You know, I can just with sort of like, I don't know, I just can't cope with anything anymore. But pinholephotography.org's a laugh, and that's got loads of info on how to do stuff as well.
Cool.
And Bristol is where, if anybody's around Bristol, the southwest, just look at it through pinholephotography.org, see what's happening at Real Photography Company, because we're a laugh.
Awesome.
I'm exhausted.
Whew. Andrew?
I better go have a cup of tea. I better go and make another pinhole camera.
Where can we find you, Andrew? What's where are you hanging out with you?
You can find me in the village of Warboys, or if you want to look online, you can find me at Warboys Snapper.
There you go.
And we were, I'll tell you, we're, Justin, last Sunday night, we were, my village was on Who Do You Think You Are? You know that TV program?
No.
Yeah, so that, Paralympic sprinter, Johnny Peacock.
Peacock, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
He had his great, great, great grandfather came from Warboys, where I live, and they filmed in the church across the road from where I'm sitting now. And we discovered that the Royal Oak pub, which is still standing, was a brothel. That was exciting. And so you can probably find it at Tucurry. Do you get that sent over? You get all the BBC programs, don't you? Who do you think you are? Looks at ancestry, you know, tracing people's...
I love that show.
Yeah, well, Warboys was on this one just last Sunday.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah. I don't have it in America because, like, everyone just have to come back to the UK all the time.
Yeah, I need to come over. I have never been over there yet, so.
You haven't been to the UK?
He hasn't got a passport, Justin.
Yeah.
See, I get to the States. I get to West Virginia now and again. Hey, that's a laugh.
That's not far from me.
No, I go to West Virginia. My cousin's there and stuff. So, I go there and have a stupid time and visit loads of small microbreweries. Yeah. It's quite good.
I just drove.
Well, next time I'm in the States. I'll try and get Mark Sink to drag me over for the month of photography because it's about time I had an excuse.
There's a whole community of really enthusiastic pinholers out on the West Coast, Justin, around Seattle. People like Zeb Andrews, who operates out of Blue Moon Cameras, and he's going to come on the show as well in a few weeks' time.
Yeah,
but those guys over on the West Coast, the Northwest Coast, Pacific Northwest, is that what they call it, Corey?
Yeah,
there's just loads of them, and Todd Slemmer, who makes his 3D printed pinhole cameras, he's out that
and Jaina.
Way. Jaina Ueda.
Ueda.
Yeah, there's loads of. A lot of these people are very heavy. They all Todd, who lives out in maybe Seattle. I'm just guessing. I can't remember. He came over for World Pinhole Day over to Norwich this year, and there was probably 30 people, and 20 of them came all over from the States just for World Pinhole Day. You know, and it's just remarkable.
Oh, it's brilliant, Bill. It's one thing the internet's useful for, getting people to get together when it comes to drilling holes.
Yeah, yeah. So cool. What you did, we didn't even have time to talk to you about how you make your laser drilled pinholes, so we'll perhaps save that for another
time. Yeah, we'll save that for another time.
Yeah, but it's not lasers.
I know.
I could. It's a fine art, as ever of one.
All right, so everybody have a great weekend. Thanks, Justin, for coming and hanging out. Andrew,
thank you.
You can go camping now.
Yes, the weather's just starting to look a bit gloomy outside, but but we are off. We're I set up the folding camper earlier in the day. And I have some red wine, and I've got some steak, and we're going to go 6 miles down the road camping for the weekend.
Have fun.
Fantastic.
All right.
Okay.
Justin, it's been a real pleasure, and look me up when you're in Cambridge. Okay.
Thanks for coming, Justin.
Cheers, Adam. Cheers, Corey.
Yep. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.